Welcome to season 9 of Next Question with me, Katie Couric. I've got some big news to share with you in our season premiere featuring the one and only Kris Jenner.
Oh my gosh, congratulations. That is very, very exciting.
And that's just the beginning. We'll also be joined by podcast host Jay Shetty, Hillary Clinton, Renee Fleming, Liz Cheney, and many more. So come on in, take a break from the incessant negativity for a weekly dose of fascinating conversations. Some of them, I promise, will actually put you in a good mood. Listen to Next Question with me, Katie Couric, on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hello, from Wonder Media Network, I'm Jenny Kaplan, host of Womanica, a daily podcast that introduces you to the fascinating lives of women history has forgotten. We've always been intrigued by stories of disappearances, whether it's a fraudster from the 17th century who kept evading the authorities or a novelist who taunted the Nazis and faked her own death. We all want to know, what happened next? To find out, listen to Womanica on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
This delightful program is brought to you by Squarespace. Beautiful websites for beautiful beverages like KombuchaDog.com. I guess kombucha means black mushroom tea, but it's much more fun to say kombucha, like chicken chimichanga. I never really want a chimichanga. I just like to ask, how's the chicken chimichanga?
There are two takeaways from what Alec Baldwin just said. One, the show is brought to you by Squarespace, and two, Alec Baldwin called our show delightful.
Welcome to Stuff You Should Know from HowStuffWorks.com.
Hey, and welcome to the podcast. I'm Josh Clark. There's Charles W. Chuck Bryant. Jerry's over there with post-nasal drip of some sort. And that makes this Stuff You Should Know.
It makes this room the infection zone.
Oh, Jerry, are you sick?
No, she's not sick. Are you? No.
Good.
She's just snotty.
That's fine, as long as she's not sick. Are you sick?
No, man.
How are you feeling? Great?
Good. I'm tired.
Are you?
Yeah.
Well, you're a dad.
Yeah.
All dads are tired, aren't they?
No. That has nothing to do with it.
Oh, yeah?
No.
Why are you tired?
Just didn't get enough sleep last night.
Okay.
But not because dad stuff.
Okay. We'll leave it at that.
Otherwise. How's that for building a wall?
Let's back away from that question, shall we? Instead, Chuck, take my hand and let's wander off into the forest.
This is pretty neat, I gotta say. I was excited about this because, A, it's dense.
Like a forest?
B, it's cool.
Like a forest?
And C, it provides a great canopy over our heads.
It does, a canopy of knowledge.
Yeah, I reverse engineered that last one.
Oh, you did?
Yeah.
I was like, man, he is on a roll today.
We're going to get some stuff wrong on this one.
I don't know if that's correct.
I feel like anytime we tackle something that's in any industry like this, the people in that industry are going to have way better current information than we will.
So I think it's funny because I picked up on the same thing, not just with the industry, but also with the battle over forestry rights.
This is a minefield, my friend.
It really is. Because this article was written a number of years back and is very friendly to the forestry industry.
Yeah.
It's not like extraordinarily conservation minded, as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah.
Well,
I don't think I had a slant.
Drop a bombshell?
No, I don't think I had a slant. I saw it as pretty neutral.
I don't know, man.
But here's how confused I was, and we'll get to this later, but these initiatives and certification programs that we'll get to later, I didn't know like which one I should like and not like at the end.
I can tell you.
Well, save it.
Okay, all right.
Because I need somebody to tell me what to like and not like.
I can tell you.
Just save it.
All right, I'm saving it.
All right.
Well, let's talk about forests in general, Chuck.
Yes. Well, let's talk about our country a little bit.
The United States.
Well, even more. Let's talk about our continent.
Okay, North America.
That's right. When settlers came over here, there was a lot of trees. There were a lot of trees.
Do you remember in our pigeon episode, like the idea that there were so many, what was it, passenger pigeons that died off that were just driven to extinction because of humans?
Yeah.
I'm pretty sure it was passenger pigeons.
I can't remember. I got confused in the episode about which pigeons.
Well, it was a very confusing thing.
Yeah.
And they think that ultimately the pigeons have been managed by Native Americans who were wiped out by disease, so that when the first Europeans really came along, they saw tons of pigeons, places overrun with pigeons because there was no one there to hunt anymore, right?
Yeah.
Same thing with the forest. They think there was so much forest cover that it was because the Native Americans who had managed the forest before
right.
had all died off,
right.
or largely died off, and then what we thought was just this crazy stretch of forest that had always been there was actually fairly new.
Ah.
But it's probably not the case.
Well, at any rate, way back in the 1600s, about 40% of land north of Mexico was trees.
Yeah.
Not too bad.
No, that's a lot of trees.
And trees are great because they give us wood. I mean, they led to, you know, pre-metal, it was all about wood.
Yeah.
You know, ships, buildings, houses, well, wagons.
William Harris, who wrote this article, yeah, he makes the very smart point that we came and cut down trees and basically built a new nation.
Yeah.
Certainly a new economy. Several new nations out of wood, definitely. For sure. Like literally out of wood.
If you're talking the world and planet Earth, about 30% is forest land, and Russia and Brazil lead the way because they have huge tracts of land.
Yeah, but as a continent, actually, Europe is the most. They have the most forest of any continent.
The most dense, I believe that.
They have 1,001 million, which is a little over a billion hectares. Hectares, 0.4 acres, right?
Sure.
And the total number of acreage, if you're in the U.S., of forest land throughout the world, 1.58 billion acres of forests.
Is that the most broad definition of a forest?
That includes everything.
And that's in the U.S.?
No, that's the world. 1.58 billion acres
okay.
in the world.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
Because in the U.S., there, if you talk to a forester, they will say everyone thinks that you see a bunch of trees and that's a forest. But they would narrow down that definition to at least 1 acre
right.
Of land, which has at least 10% tree cover.
That's a good definition for a forest. I'm on board with that.
Well, if you're talking that definition, then the U.S. Has about 750 million acres, 766 in Canada.
Yep.
And that's forest, my friend.
Boom, we're done.
Yeah.
It was a minefield, but we navigated it.
But this is about timber, and that's different than forest.
It is different than forest. So a forest is that definition that you just said. It's an acre of land with 10% tree cover, right?
Yep.
Timberland is a type of forest land, but it has to have a certain amount of usable trees on it, or timber,
yes.
to make it timberland, right?
Yes. I grew up in a forest, actually, now that I think about it.
Oh, yeah?
By that definition.
Nice. What was it called?
Well, it's called Chuck's House.
Chuck's House Forest.
Yeah. I mean, it was, I think we had like an acre and a half, and most of it was trees.
So more than 10%.
Oh, yeah, easy.
So you had a dense forest.
It was pretty dense.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
Did you learn to climb trees out there?
No, but I used to get poked fun at because I didn't grow up in a neighborhood like most kids. It was just a street with like 6 houses in the forest.
Who would make fun of you for that? What were they saying?
Well, you know, it's cool to grow up in a neighborhood when in the 80s.
Hey, man, I grew up in a neighborhood in the 80s. It wasn't that great.
I was jealous, man, because everyone else would sneak out at night to then go to their friend's house, and there were swimming pools and tennis courts and
movie
community
stars.
Centers, and it was just like me and my brother in woods. But
I guess I can see.
I got older, and everyone was like, dude, your house is awesome. You live out in the middle of the woods.
Yeah, well, plus, you were lucky to have your brother to hang out with. He's a great guy.
True. Good point.
So, you know, I had a door that led out to the back porch when
yeah.
I was growing up. It's like there's no sneaking out. I just opened the door and went out from my room.
Your
to the
parents
outside.
Were just like, go ahead. Come and go as you please.
No, I wasn't supposed to, but
right.
there wasn't a lot of sneaking involved. It was opening the door and quietly closing it.
You didn't have to. I always wanted to shimmy up a drain pipe to my room.
Have you shimmying up?
Or down.
Down's a lot easier than up.
I could have shimmied when I was 10 or 12, though. ain't no shimmying anymore.
So people have sent in that guideposts cover. Is that you?
No.
Okay.
It's
just some other kid from 1984 playing the trumpet.
Yeah, I never played the trumpet.
And oh,
I never wore blue blocker sunglasses either.
It doesn't look like you, but I was like,
No, and it may not have been a four-piece picture, but I think it was.
Okay.
Someone will find it.
I hope so. Okay, so let's get back to timberland.
Huh? Yes.
Timberland is a forest that's capable of growing something like 20 cubic feet of commercial wood per acre per year.
That's right.
That's it.
And people estimate two-thirds of our nation is forest land, and 502 million acres of that is timberland.
Yeah, that's not bad.
Not bad at all.
No, so the key here, though, is, and this is where the big debate comes up, and we're not going to get into it necessarily now, but the key is that, yes, you can have a forest that is capable of growing 20 cubic feet of commercial-grade lumber, timber, a year. But you also want it to be able to regrow.
Yeah, sustainable harvesting.
Right. So what you're after is what's called the net annual increase. This article calls it a net annual gain. That's wrong.
Yeah.
It's a net annual increase, which means that the amount of stuff you're growing in a given year is more than what you're harvesting tree-wise.
What's the difference between a gain and an increase?
I'm just saying the industry term.
Oh, gotcha.
Yeah. I looked up net industry gain, net annual gain.
And they said, you must be city folk.
Right. Idiot. It's increase. it's pretty simple. You just want to take less trees than you're growing in a particular year or than you have in reserve.
Yeah.
And, actually the United States has been in a net annual gain for decades now.
Yeah.
Like it's a real concern. It's a cause for worry that we over harvest trees.
Well, we used to, man.
That we deforest, but if you look at the historical data,
yeah,
we are growing more trees than we're taking every year.
Yeah, I think the stat was since 1920, we haven't made anything worse.
Right, and apparently...
And since the 50s, we've gotten way better.
I think, though,
like four times
the
as good.
70s were like kind of bad, but I think that was like the transition decade.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, what this made me really appreciate were early conservationists.
Yeah, like
in
Teddy
this country.
Roosevelt.
Yeah, because post-Civil War and during pre-Civil War even, people just sort of took what they wanted and did what they wanted with the land.
Yeah.
There wasn't a lot of foresight. And so early conservationists were really fighting an uphill battle back then, I think. So I just have a lot of respect for them.
I do
to
too.
Say, you know what? I don't know if this is smart. What's going to happen in 100 years? You need your log cabin, Jebediah.
What's mind-boggling to me is that that debate still goes on.
Yeah, that's true.
You know? But not even just with timber, with like climate in general, climate change, things like that.
Agreed. All right, so if you're a scientist, you're going to classify forests usually by what kind of trees are there. For instance, a tropical rainforest, you're going to have broadleaf evergreens, a boreal forest, you're going to have needleleaf evergreens.
Then there's the temperate forest, which is like what we have here in the southeast.
Yeah, and the U.S. there are five major regions, Pacific Coast, Rocky Mountain, North, South. And I love it. Alaska has its own region.
Yes.
Just because it deserves it.
And there's a lot of trees up there.
Yeah.
And in fact, there's been a little bit of a scandal recently as far as Alaska and trees go.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Is that a tease?
It's a tease.
Okay. But we're going to consider a couple of regions here, and we're going to mainly be talking about the United States because that's where we live.
Yeah, but there are trees everywhere.
Yeah, and you can apply this to a lot of places. But east of the old Mississippi, is the hardwood region, and west is softwood. And if you're talking hardwood, gums, maples, oaks, walnut, very hardwood. Walnut.
Mahogany?
Then, is mahogany in there?
Actually, now I think about it, I think mahogany is a tropical rainforest tree.
Is it?
Yeah, I'm an idiot.
All right. No, you're not.
That's what I get for coming up with something on my own.
Softwoods, you're talking pine. Spruce, hemlock, Douglas fir, redwoods, those are softwoods.
Sure.
And we're just getting started. There's a lot of information coming your way.
Should we take a break here?
Should we?
I don't know. It sounded like you were working up toward that.
That was a breaky setup, wasn't it?
Yeah.
All right, let's take a break. We'll come back and we'll talk about why wood is good.
Get emotional with me, Radhi Devlukia, in my new podcast, A Really Good Cry. We're going to talk about and go through all the things that are sometimes difficult to process alone. We're going to go over how to regulate your emotions, diving deep into holistic personal development, and just building your mindset to have a happier, healthier life. We're going to be talking with some of my best friends.
I didn't know we were going to go there on this.
People that I admire.
When we say listen to your body, really tune in to what's going on.
Authors of books that have changed my life.
Now you're talking about sympathy, which is different than empathy, right?
And basically have conversations that can help us get through this crazy thing we call life.
I already believe in myself. I already see myself. And so when people give me an opportunity, I'm just like, oh, great, you see me too.
We'll laugh together, we'll cry together, and find a way through all of our emotions. Never forget, it's okay to cry as long as you make it a really good one. Listen to A Really Good Cry with Radhi Devlukia on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Tamika D. Mallory.
And it's your boy, my son, the General.
And we are your hosts of TMI. New year, new name, new energy, but...
same old us.
And catch us every Wednesday on the Black Effect Network, breaking down social and civil rights issues, pop culture, and politics in hopes of pushing our culture forward to make the world a better place for generations to come. But that's not all. We will also have special guests to add their thoughts on the topics, as well as break down different political issues with local activists in their community. If you like to be informed and to expand your thoughts, listen to TMI on the Black Effect Podcast Network, iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
That's right.
All right. Wood is good because you can use it for lots of stuff, which we'll talk about.
And I didn't realize this, that we've been using it for a very long time.
Yeah.
At least 1.5 million years, right?
Starting with fire and like clubs and...
yeah. Did you realize that we'd harnessed fire that many years ago?
I don't know if I ever really thought about it.
That is a long time for people to be building fires, 1.5 million years ago.
Yeah.
That completely reshaped my ideas of hominids from 1.5 million years ago.
What did you think about them before?
Not that they could create fire.
They were a bunch of cold dopes?
A little bit. Maybe that they just kind of made do with what came their way rather than actually making fire, you know?
Yeah. We should do a podcast on the origins of fire.
We did do one on fire.
Yeah, but I don't think we covered like the first fires, did we? Or did we?
Probably not.
Yeah.
I think I've since seen Quest for Fire, which we talked about.
Oh, yeah.
Good movie.
I kind of want to talk about my favorite part, but this is a family podcast, so I won't.
Yeah, it's pretty brutal in a lot of ways, isn't it?
Yeah. All right, so why is wood good? Like I said, you can make stuff out of it. Another big thing is carbon sequestration, which is why you hear a lot of people battling clear-cutting forests, because carbon sequestration is great. It traps carbon, so the buildup of CO2 is reduced.
Yeah, as a matter of fact, trees account for 70% of the organic carbon locked in the earth.
Yeah, that's why that canopy is important.
Right.
They also provide habitats for all our animals and birds and insects and all the plants and good things that we love. And the hydrologic cycle. So a forest will help soak up rainfall and filter the water as it becomes groundwater. All very important stuff.
Yeah, if you like drinking water, you can thank trees for helping keep the soil in tip-top shape to filter out all that nasty stuff.
Yeah.
So, yes, forests are extraordinarily important, right?
Wood is good.
But you also can make pretty good use of it, too. Like,
sure.
If you're a clever primate like we humans are, you can not only use it for fire, which a lot of people still do around the world. Firewood is still a huge use of wood, of timber around the world.
Nothing beats a natural wood fire in a fireplace in your home.
No, it's true.
You know?
But do you remember when we shot those Toyota videos at Carnegie Mellon?
Oh, yeah.
And one of the innovation things was like a filter, like an easy, cheap, portable filter for cooking fires, indoor cooking fires.
I remember that.
Because that was a big problem. People were like using wood fires to cook with, but they were doing it indoors and like suffering all sorts of lung problems.
Yeah, and that still happens in, you know, non-industrialized nations.
Yes.
Is that what we call things?
It says it's the primary fuel for cooking and heating in developing countries.
Right.
Non-industrialized. I think that's even better.
All right. So here in the U.S., though, and in a lot of countries these days, only 7% of timber is used for, I guess, heating and cooking.
Yeah, and there's a big push against even that 7%, too.
Really?
Yeah, it's just such a... I agree with you. I love that having a fire
is
fireplace.
Nice, but it's wasteful?
Yes.
Okay. Well, I don't have a working fireplace, so I just like them.
You just like the idea of it.
Well, I want one, but I have one of those old, you know, houses from the 1930s that... It's expensive to get it retrofitted.
Have you ever gotten an estimate on it?
Yeah, I need chimney work. I need a bigger firebox. They said something like $8,000 or $10,000. The guy like tried to talk me out of it.
Yeah.
The dude, I was like, you don't want to make money?
Yeah.
Like, I want a fire. And you're like, oh, I don't know, it's pretty expensive.
I wouldn't.
It's like, all right.
It's wasteful.
So 7% goes toward that. Lumber, which we'll get to in a minute, is about 53% in the U.S. of timber.
Yeah, and most of that goes to new house construction, it turns out.
Oh, really?
Mm-hmm.
That makes sense. Pulp and paper are 32%, and then composites like plywood and veneer are the other 7.
Right.
Although I think we're missing one percentage point, aren't we? Or are we?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I wonder what that is.
It's the mystery percent.
The mystery percent.
God knows what they're doing to that 1% of wood.
All right, so I said the word lumber. And lumber isn't just cut wood.
No, just like timberland isn't just forest.
Yeah.
No, forest isn't just timberland.
Right. Lumber is actually a specific thing. It is wood that is squared or rectangular. So
yeah.
When you go to the hardware store and you see all of the 2x4s and 2x6s and all that stuff, that is lumber because it is square.
If you point to a post, a round post, and go... Give me 3 of the lumbers.
They'll say, boy, where'd you come from?
Yeah, you're wrong on a couple of points here. So that's called roundwood, actually.
Yeah.
That doesn't that's not included in lumber.
That's a little nitpicky if you're outside the industry, I think.
I agree with you wholeheartedly. But
if someone points that out, then, I don't know, punch them in the face with a 2x4.
Right. That's not lumber. That's roundwood. Remember Hacksaw Jim Duggan? Didn't he attack people with a 2x4 in the WWF?
I didn't watch a ton of wrestling.
I'm pretty sure he had a 2x4.
That makes sense.
It's violent.
Construction, it's about a 50-50 split with lumber in the U.S. About half goes to construction, and about half goes to pallets, crates, and furniture.
Yeah, dude.
No, I didn't know it would be that high.
I read... an extraordinarily interesting article on the pallet trade.
Oh, I'm sure it's...
There's like a whole cartel controlling pallets people rebel against.
Yeah.
And there's like pallet thieves and counterfeiters. And
yeah.
It's a really interesting article. I'll see if I can find it. I'll post it in the podcast page for this.
Well, pallets, you can make a lot of cool things out of pallets, and a lot of people are finding other uses, so they think you can just go behind the grocery store and take them.
Sure.
So now a lot of places have big signs that are like, do not take these pallets.
No, especially if they're blue.
Like, that's stealing.
If they're blue pallets,
yeah,
you can get the place where you stole them from sued.
Yeah, that's the saying, if the pallet is blue, it's not for you.
Because you'll get sued.
That's right. Furniture, if you make furniture, you're going to like hardwood, like oak and maple, because it's durable and it has that lovely grain.
And mahogany.
That we all love so much.
Right. But softwood is no slouch either.
No, but pallets are used in hardwood too because it's sturdy.
Right.
But yeah, softwood's a different deal.
No, and they usually use softwood for construction lumber too.
Yeah.
Because it contains fewer knots and things like that. And actually softwood is used, Chuck, more for construction lumber because you can make it long and straight, which is... That's how you want your construction lumber, long and straight. Nobody wants like kind of a topsy-turvy house.
Yeah.
Maybe a crazy person, but most people don't. They want straight plum houses.
Yeah, although it's tough if you've ever done a home reno project to find straight lumber these days.
Is that right?
Yeah, you go in there and they all seem like they're warped and bent. And
if you're
an amateur like me, it doesn't help you out any if your lumber's not straight.
No, you want straight lumber.
Like, I don't know how to make up for that, like my buddy Isaac in Kansas that helped me do my house.
Right.
He would go pick out stuff, and I would say, this is curved. He'd be like, I can account for that.
Huh.
But I can't.
He's got, like, a special organ in his brain.
Yeah, it's called smarts. Construction carpentry smarts.
Okay, so that's lumber, right?
Yeah.
You can also make paper out of wood.
Yes.
This might be the fact of the podcast. You ready for this?
Yeah.
Paper is made out of wood.
Oh, I thought you had something else.
No?
You got me.
Have we done one on paper before? Because this seemed awfully familiar.
No, but I will say this touched off like five different topics that we should cover.
Okay.
Paper being one of them.
All right. The origin of fire, paper.
Yeah.
What else?
Deforestation.
Okay.
In earnest.
Yeah.
We're going to touch on it, but, and then there's a couple more, I think.
Okay.
Pornography. Just kidding. So let's talk about the cellular structure of wood, because it's very important.
Well, especially when you're talking about paper.
Yeah.
Like, that was not just a non sequitur. It actually makes sense.
Exactly.
So, trees.
Yeah.
Like, everything else are made of cells, correct?
That's right.
And when you take enough of these cells and stack them together, you can create something as strong and tall and rigid as a tree.
Yeah.
But it takes a certain kind of cell to make a tree.
Yeah, the cells, if you think of the walls of the cells, they make the tree strong, and there are a couple of chemicals that make up these walls, cellulose and lignin. And cellulose is flexible and bendy, and lignin says, no, no, I'm your glue, cellulose. I'm going to keep you more rigid because I don't want you to bend.
Right.
So they work together.
Yeah.
To make
whether cellulose likes it or not.
Yeah, I always wondered about that.
It has to go along with it.
It's like, I wanted to bend, lignin. Get out of my face.
Right. Lignin's like, no. No coloring outside the lines.
So if you separate those things, which we've been doing for a long time now, you can get those cellulose fibers and actually make something called pulp, which will eventually make paper.
Right. And you can form it into a mat, press and dry it, and bleach it, and turn it into paper, like you said. You can also make other stuff, too. Technically, fiberboard. You know, the stuff that they use to put on the backs of dressers and things these days? Crud?
Yeah.
That's actually made from paper pulp.
Yeah, MDF.
Or wood pulp, I should say.
If you're at another hardware store and some guy that works there or lady says, what you want to use is MDF.
What's that?
Medium density fiberboard.
Okay.
And that way they won't think you're city folk.
All right.
You can say, yeah, MDF.
Sure.
Totally. And then they'll know you're city folk.
I'll be like, give me three of those MDFs.
And then you have hardboard, and that's even stronger than fiberboard. And it's just, I think it's harder because it's pressed together with so much pressure, it's more dense.
Yeah, a fiberboard is pulp and glue pressed, pressed together. Hardboard is the same thing, but pressed together, like you said, under pressure. And then, completely different, actually, although it does seem like it would bear a pretty striking resemblance, is particle board, right?
Yes. These are composites. Plywood and particle board are both composites.
Right.
But they are different. The difference between MDF and particle board is MDF is, well, particle board is cheaper, and it's made out of sawdust. Whereas the MDF is made of actual fiber.
Right, out of pulp.
Yeah. Does that make sense?
Yeah. Like, Chuck, you realize that Stuff You Should Know has hit such a stride that we're talking about particle board. It just hit me.
Plywood is when you take, if you look at plywood and on the side of it, you'll see that it's a lot of little veneers pressed together.
Yeah, that's what they're called.
Yeah.
Veneers.
Veneers.
Plywood's great, but if you really want something that's just as tough, just as durable, but cheaper, you're going to go for the oriented strand board.
OSB, baby.
Which is basically like plywood made out of particle board.
Yeah, and it's all but replaced plywood in construction these days, home construction, because it's cheaper, it is stronger and more durable, and I was wondering why it was stronger, and it's because it comes from, it's right there in the name. It's oriented. The specific orientation of the wood strands makes it stronger.
Oh, okay.
So it's not just haphazardly tossed together and pressed, I guess.
By God.
Specifically oriented.
Right.
Invented in 1963.
By man.
Yeah, in California, I think, actually.
Nice.
Yeah. So your OSB, if you go into your hardware store and they'll say, you either want MDF or OSB, say, I know what I'm talking about, so don't try and trick me.
Right. I didn't just fall off of the turnip truck.
Of the lumber truck.
All right.
Where are we now? Are we harvesting yet?
Yeah. So to get to this point, to get to all this wonderful products of lumber, timber, sorry. Man, I have a lot of trouble not confusing lumber with timber.
That's right.
But lumber is timber. Timber is not necessarily lumber.
Right.
That's what I was taught as a young boy. So when you harvest timber, there's a couple of approaches, right? And, well, there's several approaches, but they really fall under two umbrellas. One is the take everything to hell with ecology approach called clear cutting.
Yes.
That is, all these trees can make some money. Ergo, I'm going to cut down all these trees.
Yeah, typically over 5 acres is a clear cut.
Yes.
Anything under that is called a patch cut.
Okay.
Although people disagree on that definition, too.
But the suggestion is that under 5 acres, an area that small could recover being effectively clear cut?
I'm not sure it has to do with recovery.
Oh, it has to do with the amount of money you made?
I don't know. I'm not sure.
All right. Well, with clear cutting, you just go in and you cut down everything. It's pretty straightforward, really. It takes slightly more thought to come up with a good, what's called a silviculture approach. Silviculture takes into account the idea that you want that area that you cut down to grow back, to renew, so that, again, you hit that net annual increase rather than decrease.
Right.
To where the amount of trees you have in stock or growing in a particular year is actually more than the amount of trees you harvest that same year.
Right.
To do that, you have to be selective. You have to be smart in the number, amount, and type of trees you cut down during any given tree cut.
Yeah. With clear cutting, when you hear that, you would just think, like, why would anyone argue that that's a good idea?
Yeah.
But people do. It's very controversial. If you're in the timber industry, yeah.
Forestry industry.
You can say, you will think in good confidence that you can say that clear cutting is fine if you do it the right way.
I don't get that.
Yeah, they said that there are 7 conditions, that if you meet them, then it's actually better.
that sounds like propaganda.
Do you want me to read the 7
yes,
conditions?
Yes, I do, because I'm interested.
When regenerating tree species that need full sunlight to stimulate seed sprouting and seedling growth, when dealing with sparse or exposed shallow rooted trees that are in danger of being damaged by wind, when trying to produce an even aged stand, and a stand I found is a group of trees that are the same species, age, and condition that you can manage as a unit. That's a stand of trees.
Okay.
When regenerating stands of tree species that are dependent on wind-blown seed, root suckers or cones that need fire to drop seed, when faced with salvaging over-mature stands or stands killed by insects, disease, or fire, when converting to another tree species by planting or seeding, and finally, to provide habitat for wildlife species that require edge, new ground, and high-density, even-age stands. I couldn't make sense out of any of that.
Well, one of it really stuck out to me, and it was that It for when you're cutting down an entire area that's been hit by pests or disease. That one makes sense to me, especially if you're trying to contain an epidemic.
Yeah.
Sure, clear cut. That makes sense. Everything else, I mean, there's some logic to it. At least it's not just total madness.
Yeah. Opponents to clear cutting will say it increases soil erosion, water degradation, increases silt in streams and rivers. Aesthetics is the main reason that most people are opposed to it.
Yeah.
Or that many people are.
Sure.
Is that it just looks like a wasteland.
Right. Well, the problem is also with clear cutting, it sets the stage for invasive species of, say, like fast growing weeds to overcome seedlings.
Yeah.
And it keeps the forest from regenerating.
Yeah.
So therefore, clear cutting, most people, I guess, except for the people who came up with those 7 conditions, tend to believe that it's an unsustainable method of harvesting timber.
Right. A more sustainable method is shelter wood cutting.
That's a type of silviculture.
Yeah, and that's when they use partial cuttings over time. We're talking over 10 or 20 years, only 2 to 4 harvests, where things can naturally regenerate during that time frame.
Right.
That sounds like a good idea.
It is. There's also seed tree harvesting, and then selection harvesting, which is where you basically go in and say, this tree, that tree.
Yeah, that are more marketable. But proponents of clear cutting say that's worse. I don't know why, though.
I can see. I can see what they're saying. I mean, like, think about it. Like, artificially selecting.
Trees.
Yeah. Yeah. And you're disrupting the balance or the ecology of the forest by saying just these great oaks, leave all these other crummy elms.
Yeah.
But the thing is you're also affecting the ecology by cutting down everything.
Yeah. The ecosystem. I would like to hear from someone that really knows their stuff, that is a proponent of clear cutting, to explain it better to me.
Yeah. Okay.
Than the internet did.
Please do.
All right.
So when you do use any kind of silvicultural technique, and you're not just clear cutting, you have to go through the forest and figure out what trees you're going to take. A lot of times, and even with clear cutting, they will leave, trees that are, say, 6 inches in diameter or less in size. They're too young. It's like how you, leave, fawns when you're deer hunting.
Yeah.
It's the exact same thing.
I love the name of that process when determining, and surveying the land to work it all out. It's called cruising.
It is.
I'm going to go cruise the forest.
Right. Everybody, you know, drives around the forest with the pack of cigarettes rolled up in their shirt sleeves.
Next comes felling. And I got confused with tree felling in the correct way. So I put a little post on Facebook and I had a guy named Gabriel Fribley who worked as a Forest Service fire and fuel management dude, and he said, I've cut hundreds, if not thousands, of trees. So you want to hear what he says?
Yeah.
Because we would screw it up, I guarantee it.
Okay.
Are you about to say that you know better than this guy?
I don't know better than this guy, but this article was definitely wrong from everything I found.
Yeah, that's exactly why I asked. He said terminology changes depending on where you are and who you're talking to. There are a number of different ways to do so, but the safest and most common is to cut a wedge out of a tree, measuring about a third of the diameter of the tree in the direction you want the tree to fall. Then that's where I would just stop.
Yeah. My brain just shut down.
Yeah. Cutting this wedge will require two cuts, a flat cut and then a sloping cut that meets the flat cut and frees the wedge. The combination of these two cuts is commonly called the face cut.
Okay. So then that is on the side of the tree in the direction it's going to fall.
Correct.
And it's like a triangle.
Yes.
With one, the bottom cut is 90 degrees. The top cut is 45 degrees.
I think so.
Okay.
The wedge acts as a hinge, so the tree falls in a safe, controlled manner. Then there's the third cut, most commonly called the back cut, which is a straight cut in the opposite side of the tree, about halfway through the diameter of the tree. Maybe a little more.
And that's about 2 inches above the bottom cut on the other side.
Okay.
From what I saw.
And he said, ideally, you want to leave 20% of the diameter of the tree intact between the back cut and the wedge, and that's called holding wood. And I think he said holding wood is just what it sounds like. It holds a tree together to make, like, it's not coming down on your head, basically.
Mm-hmm.
It holds it together till you're ready. And he said, if you've done these two correctly, three, actually, you should be able to simply push the tree over with your hands.
Wow.
Or drive a wedge into the back to bring the tree down.
I'll bet that's pretty awesome to push a huge tree down your hands.
And yell timber?
Yeah.
So thank you to Gabriel Fribley.
Yeah, thanks, Gabriel.
And for firefighting forest fires.
Yeah, that's pretty neat. Or starting them.
Oh, come on.
No, the Forestry Service does control burns.
Oh, yeah, I thought you meant, like, because there have been cases where they've found arson. Uh-huh. And it was actually a fireman.
Or his mother.
A firefighter.
Do you remember that?
No.
There was a dude who was a wildfire firefighter who was not getting enough work because there weren't many wildfires.
I think that's what I was thinking. Was it the mom?
The mom went and set a fire so that her son could make some money.
God bless her. Not really, but, you know, the mom that just wants to, like, take care of business for her son.
Right.
That's nice.
So, Chuck, you've gone through, you've cut a bunch of trees.
Yep.
The first thing the loggers do is they hop all over the trees and go hip, 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 and they cut all the limbs off.
Yes.
Right?
That's called bucking.
Yep. And then once you've got the tree bucked, you cut it into huge logs.
Yep.
From top to bottom. And then you tie the logs up or you chain them to a tractor and you skid them along a skidding trail.
That's right.
To, what's called the, landing area.
All right. And they pre-plan these skidding trails.
Yeah, this is very important.
It's not just willy-nilly, because they are trying to protect the forest at the same time.
Yeah, because if you have a bunch of tractors driving out with lots and lots of heavy logs,
yeah.
heavy logs
yeah.
attached to them, you're going to compact the soil.
Like this was a tree 10 minutes ago.
Right.
Now it's a log.
Yes, huge logs. And so if you're going to compact some area of soil, you might as well just compact the same area of soil rather than a bunch of areas of soil so that yeah. the rest of the forest can stay healthy. And when you get to the landing area, these logs are going to be basically graded and sorted, and some of them are either going to be sent straight to the pulp mills to be
yep.
created into paper.
Those are cruddier logs, generally.
Right, or fiberboard or something like that. And then others may be sent, and the higher grade stuff will probably be sent to sawmills.
Right.
Or concentration yards.
Right.
Which are basically the second stage of these landing areas where these people say, we're going to put all these, this specific species of trees over here.
Yeah.
Because this one sawmill likes only oaks, so we're going to send them their oaks.
Right.
So either the landing area goes directly to the sawmill, or there's that extra step of the concentration yard in there.
Yeah, and if this sounds dangerous,
yeah.
it is. And depending on what year you're looking at, logging is either the one or two, aside from commercial fishing, most dangerous job in the United States, at least.
Either way, you can find documentary television shows about these professions
yeah,
on
can.
Discovery Channel.
That's right.
Check your local listing.
And other channels. This past year, I think it was commercial fishing. Airline pilot was number three.
I find that very unnerving.
Yeah, right?
Yeah.
That's what I thought. I was like, I thought planes didn't crash much.
What's up with that?
I don't know.
Well, my fear of flying just came back.
Farmers and ranchers are four, in case you're wondering. Mining machine operator. Then roofers, sanitation collectors, which I thought was interesting.
Are you sure it's not like military jet pilot?
Dude, soldier wasn't even listed in the top 10.
An airline pilot.
But, like I said, I think they go by deaths in that previous year.
I don't care.
So it probably depends on if we're at war or, you know.
Okay, but airline pilot was
yeah,
still in there.
It was, dude. And then truckers and industrial machinists.
Especially ice road truckers.
Probably.
Yeah, for real. I'm sure among truckers that they probably have the higher mortality rate.
Well, you were shilling for Discovery.
I think that was on History.
Oh, okay. You're shilling more for Discovery now than when they owned it, which is weird.
It is weird.
What do you think Podcaster is?
Podcaster, pretty cushy, unless like, apparently you're on a commercial airline.
Like a 1 in 10 million chance of death?
Yes.
If you're a podcaster?
On-the-job
death?
You know, we could figure that out if we knew what math was.
I'm trying to think if, like, how we would die from doing this. Flying somewhere to do a live podcast, probably.
Right. I would say if somebody locked the door and Jerry started a fire in here,
right,
then we could probably die from podcasting.
Or actually, in our case, it would be if Jerry finally snaps and just murders us both.
I don't know. I think we could fend Jerry off. So, Chuck, once the stuff hits the sawmill, we'll yep. go there. We already kind of hit the pulp mill.
Yeah.
Which stink, by the way. One of the foulest smells on earth is
are those,
paper.
Yeah. Like the... can I just say egg fart?
No, way worse than that.
Oh, I thought it was like that real sulfury smell, no?
That's well water down in Florida.
Okay.
This is like, it's its own smell.
All right.
You've surely smelled it before.
You ever been to a chicken farm?
Okay, you're right.
That's not funny.
That might be the worst smell of all. Didn't you used to work on chicken farms doing software or something?
Yeah. Not on farms.
Oh, okay.
But other people in our company would go to the farms and like
Man,
teach them how to use the software.
It smells so bad.
Which is, imagine that job, going teaching these people that have been like literally counting chicken heads for their entire life, teach them how to use the computer to do it.
Yeah.
They were not receptive many times.
Talk about hunting and pecking.
Yeah, there was a lot of hunting and pecking.
So at the sawmill, right?
Yeah.
When you're cutting up Well, when you get a bunch of logs, you're like, these are some good logs.
Yeah.
But I can't do much with this bark. You can use mulch, that kind of thing.
Sure.
And actually, bark, I didn't realize this, bark represents basically one of two organs of the tree.
Yes.
There's actually three.
Should we talk about the inside of a tree a little bit?
Yeah, I thought this was interesting.
Yeah, me too.
So the bark is the phloem. It's the sugar conducting cells.
Phloem.
And basically it just provides energy. It transfers energy throughout the tree.
Yeah. It's like the internal piping part of it is the phloem.
Yeah. And there's that one Bugs Bunny song it makes. Like, you know, that Bugs Bunny assembly line song? Remember the...
Totally.
Powerhouse? Power something.
Yeah, yeah.
So that's the sound that makes if you listen very carefully in a forest.
True. There's another set of internal piping, the tissue called the xylem, and the xylem carries the water up and down the tree.
Right.
And they are well suited to do so because they are like pipes. They are shaped like piping.
Right. So the phloem.
Phloem.
That's bark.
Yeah.
The xylem, that's the wood inside. And in between the two, you have a thin layer that's basically stem cells. It's called the cambium.
Yes.
And the cambium produces phloem and xylem cells. And it produces xylem cells inward, right?
Yeah.
So the part of the tree that's closest to the bark is also the youngest.
Yeah, the heartwood.
No, that's the center.
Yeah.
That's the sapwood. Further inside, deeper into the tree, that's the older xylem. And that's the heartwood. It's just the oldest part of the tree.
Yes.
And when a log gets to the sawmill, they're going to basically separate those two things because there's different uses for sapwood and for heartwood. But the first thing they're going to do is get rid of the bark.
Yeah, they put it in a debarking drum, and it's kind of like a nightclub. It just kind of everything rubs together.
Yeah, they put several different logs in and let the logs rub their own bark off of one another.
Yeah, they put on a little music.
It's pretty horrific.
Maybe
if you
a foam
think of
machine.
It like you're a tree.
And all of a sudden, you have a naked tree.
Right.
You know?
Strip the skin right off of it.
And that bark can become mulch and what else?
Oh, fuel.
Fuel?
Pretty much it.
Okay.
Decorative mulch and fuel. But once you've got that naked log, you're all set. So you want to cut the sapwood from the heartwood because the heartwood... It's extraordinarily strong, and you use it for posts and timbers and beams and things like that you really are going to put a lot of weight on.
Yeah, flooring sometimes.
Right, sometimes. And actually, there's another article I read once about this this commercial diving company down in like Central Florida.
Yeah.
That their whole job was they would go down in the swamp and like raise old cypress logs.
Oh, yeah.
From the 19th century that have just been down there since then.
Yeah.
And they sell them as like reclaimed original, like heart of cypress for flooring. People pay mind-boggling amounts for.
Oh, I'm sure.
Because this log was felled, you know, 100-something years ago.
Yeah.
And it just sank. It happened to be one of the ones that sank, and they couldn't do anything with it back then. There were so many cypress trees that they just didn't even bother with those. So now these guys go down and dive and identify them and raise them up and then sell them.
That junk is heavy.
Yeah.
And actually, that perfect time to mention my buddy Jason from Damcaster Guitars.
Uh-huh.
He built me a custom Telecaster replica,
nice.
And they used old wood from a dam in Georgia that had been underwater for like 100 years.
That's really cool.
And this thing is the heaviest guitar. It's beautiful,
mm-hmm.
but it's tough on my back.
Is it? Is it worth it, though?
Yeah, man. It's gorgeous. And the wood they get is really just heavy and dense and gorgeous wood. And they got this big load of it from a dam that they tore down in, I think, Columbus, Georgia. And so they've got all this wood now that they're making these sweet guitars out of.
Would you name your guitar?
I haven't named it. I don't really name my guitars, although he wanted me to.
Yeah. You got to name your guitar.
I got four guitars. They're 1 through 4.
No. You should name one Joni and one Chachi at least.
All right. And one.
And always keep them right next to each other.
And one Fonzie and one.
Ralph Mouth.
Now, who was Fonzie's leather Tuscadero?
Yeah, Pinky Tuscadero.
Well, they're sisters.
So was Pinky the younger sister?
I think Leather was the one that looked like Joan Jett, and Pinky was the one that looked like a bombshell model. Like had the pink sweaters and the big poofy hair.
So which one did he date?
I think he dated Pinky.
Okay.
Leather, she didn't need guys. She was a rock and roller.
I think I remember who you're talking about.
Yeah, she was.
I don't remember Pinky Tuscadero. I definitely remember Leather Tuscadero.
Yeah.
Man, whoever wrote that show was a genius.
Right?
Yeah.
Well, what they're doing is they're satisfying everyone. They're like, you like the ladies rough and tumble, or you like them dressed up in pink with, like, poofy hair?
Right. Do you like them with an Italian name?
Right. Where are we? Have we debarked?
We're in, like, 1950s Milwaukee.
Right.
Yes, we have debarked to answer your question.
Okay, so we've debarked. You got a naked log. If it's going to be paper, it's going to go to a chipper, which cuts the log into little squares, about 2 inches by a quarter of an inch thick. And they're going to mix those chips up with chemicals and stuff. They're going to put it in a digester. It's a big pressure cooker.
Mm-hmm.
And that is what separates that cellulose from the lignin that we talked about earlier to get your pulp.
Yeah. Just want to get that lignin out of there.
Yeah, and it's wet. It's fibrous. They bleach it to the proper shade, mix it with water again, form it into big mats, and then press them under these incredible rollers to press out all that water.
Right.
And then there you go. You've got what will be paper.
Right. And if you're making lumber, you send your log to the Scooby-Doo head rig is what it's called.
Yeah, man, those things are awesome.
The thing that people are always tied on going toward.
Oh, yeah, sort of.
And just cuts the log in half, or it cuts the edges off and maybe like just cuts out the heart.
Yeah, just sort of roughs it out.
Right. And then you have a couple of other types of saws. There's a trimmer that squares the ends. And before that, you have an edger, which creates the edges for your lumber.
Yeah.
And then, of course, there's a whole other process involved in making roundwood, a.k.a. posts. Which are not lumber.
Evidently. Your heartwood is going to be older, obviously, because you know how you can tell a tree by the rings, those inner rings that we talked about,
right. The
xylem.
Right, and as the cambium is creating more xylem cells, they're going on the outside of the heartwood.
Yeah.
And the tree is growing outward.
And there's going to be more knots in that heartwood, too, from branches past.
It's sturdier, but a lot of people would also be like, I don't want to see knots. So they're not going to use it for things.
Yeah, or
like,
I do want to see knots.
Yeah.
Depending on what you're doing.
Sickos.
Like a good knot in the right place. For instance, my guitar has a beautiful knot in the center of the back that's just gorgeous.
Joni?
No, that, I would call this one Pinky Tuscadero, I think.
Okay, so that's Pinky Tuscadero.
Maybe Leather Tuscadero.
Leather Tuscadero.
Yeah. But I actually looked up knots. I was like, wait, what is a knot? Not even thinking. Well, of course, it's just a former branch.
Oh, I didn't think about that either.
Yeah, it's either a branch base or a branch bud that never happened.
Huh. Do you know, not only did I not think that that's what a knot was, I didn't even think what a knot was.
Yeah. All right, and the last part of that process is you got to dry the stuff out. So you stack it up, sort it out, and you dry it in a kiln. Correct?
Yeah.
All right.
Just like you made something out of clay.
Should we take a break?
Yeah, let's take a break, man. And then we'll take it home.
Oh, hi, I'm Rachel Zoe, and I'm back for another season of my podcast, Climbing in Heels. You might know me from the Rachel Zoe Project, or perhaps from my work as a celebrity stylist. And guess what? I'm still just as fully obsessed with all things fashion, beauty, and business. My podcast, Climbing in Heels, is all about celebrating the stories of extraordinary women, and this season, we're taking things up a notch. I'll be talking to some incredible women across so many industries, from models and beauty industry stars to doctors, entrepreneurs, and TV personalities. Climbing in Heels is here to bring you a weekly dose of glamour, inspiration, and fun. Every week, listeners will be able to ask me any questions. I'm answering it all. My life is absolutely crazy with so much going on, and I'm so beyond excited to bring you along for the ride. Whether we're talking red carpet looks, current trends, or products I'm obsessed with, I'm here to be your fashion fairy godmother. Listen to Climbing in Heels every Friday on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Tamika D. Mallory.
And it's your boy, my son, the General.
And we are your hosts of TMI. New year, new name, new energy, but...
same old us.
Oh, yeah.
And catch us every Wednesday on the Black Effect Network, breaking down social and civil rights issues, pop culture, and politics,
in hopes of pushing our culture forward to make the world a better place for generations to come. But that's not all. We will also have special guests to add their thoughts on the topics, as well as break down different political issues with local activists in their community. If you like to be informed and to expand your thoughts, listen to TMI on the Black Effect Podcast Network, iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
That's right.
So, Chuck, you kind of mentioned, like, early conservation folks that you were in awe of.
John Muir, Teddy Roosevelt.
Yeah, John Muir was cool weirdo.
Yeah.
These people, they reacted to this rampant deforestation that was going on. Like, there was a significant amount of logging that happened between the 17th century and the mid-19th century.
Yeah, right? Up to 30% of the original forest land by the end of the Civil War was gone.
Yeah, and we're talking about a billion acres.
Wow.
That was originally there. So 30% of that gone, right?
Unbelievable.
And there was what was called a, they were worried that there was going to be a quote, national famine of wood.
Yeah.
And it wasn't just conservation at the time. Like, plastics had not been developed.
Sure.
Cheap, easy metal alloys weren't developed until, say, the mid-20th century, right?
Yeah.
So
we used wood.
Yeah, we really used wood a lot.
Yeah.
And for fuel, for cooking, for heating, all that stuff.
Sure.
We needed wood. So it was going to be a big deal if we ran out of wood. And as a result, a lot of people got behind these conservation efforts, and especially the government here in the United States.
Yeah.
All government levels own forest land. But for the most part, the federal government owns the most.
Yes.
And they don't just protect it and say, this is off limits. They say, you guys can come and pay for the right to cut down some, trees from here, but you're going to follow our rules.
Yeah. 323 million acres of federally owned land in this country is public forest land.
Yeah.
So either like national forest or I guess to be used by the logging industry if you meet the right conditions, I guess.
Yeah, but I think even national forests fall under that umbrella as well.
Yeah, I didn't mean that they were not the same.
What does happen sometimes is, say, an animal will be placed, an animal that calls forest land or timberland its home will be placed on the endangered list. And as a result of that, the forest industry will just completely shift. And that was the case with the Mexican spotted owl in the 90s.
Yeah, what happened to that guy?
So the Mexican spotted owl was on its way to becoming extinct.
Yeah.
And it made its home in the western softwood temperate forests,
yeah,
right? And the U.S. government decided that this was enough of a problem that they put it on the endangered species list and protected it. And that meant that its habitat was protected, which meant that all of this public land that all these logging companies used to go and log on,
yeah,
they couldn't log there anymore.
A lot of they did not like that decision.
No, they didn't. It was enormous.
Yeah.
And you know that a federal agency is doing its job when it's being sued by conservationists and logging companies, right?
Yeah.
At the same time over the same thing.
Sure.
Or else they're not doing their job at all,
right?
Depending on how you look at it. But eventually, the Mexican spotted owl was protected, and its habitat was protected. And so the forestry, the timber industry, shifted eastward.
Yeah.
And so there was a shift not just in direction on the continent, but also in where they were taking timber from.
Right.
So now more timber is taken from privately held lands in the east than public held lands in the west because of this one type of owl.
Right.
Completely changed the complexion of the timber industry in the United States.
Wow.
But the timber industry is doing just fine.
Yeah.
You know, and it's a real testimony that, like, it can adapt.
Yeah.
You know?
The
Mexican spotted owl can adapt, but the timber industry can, apparently.
You ever see owls in Atlanta?
Yeah, I have before.
Boy, they're amazing.
I love owls.
Gorgeous. And that wingspan, it's like, it's remarkable when you see one fly.
Yes.
It's like, whoa, that's bigger than most birds.
Yeah. Have you ever had one, like, perch outside of your window while you're trying to sleep?
Yeah, well, we have one that lives behind our house.
Does it keep you up?
No, we've seen it a couple of times, and we hear it a lot, which I love. It doesn't, like, wake me up or anything.
Oh, we had one that was keeping us awake.
Really? Mm-hmm. You shoot it?
No.
No?
I just went out and shined a flashlight in its general direction.
Yeah.
And it piped down. Never heard from it again.
Oh, wow.
So you got the message.
Gotcha.
And we were owl-less after that.
He's like that guy with the flashlight. He's bad news. Right. I'm getting out of here.
He means business.
All right. So the federal government owns a lot of land, which is managed by some different bodies. But it's, you know, they try and do their best job with things like the Healthy Forest Restoration Act, signed in 2003 by G.W. Bush.
Right.
To help protect forest land.
So, Chuck, it's about here, though, that, like, this is when I was like, I feel like we're really wading into unexplained territory.
A dark forest?
Yeah, there's a lot of, like, I suspect a lot of greenwashing going on. And so I started poking around.
Yeah.
And I found that the Sustainable Forestry Initiative is very frequently accused of greenwashing.
The SFI.
Yeah. So, you know how, like fair trade, like you'll look for a fair trade label and you'll be like, I'm going to pay a little more for this because I believe that the people who made it were paid a better wage than, you know, this competitor that wasn't fair trade. That's what the Sustainable Forestry Initiative seal of approval was meant for.
Okay.
That you could look for it on like a ream of paper or something and say, oh, well, this thing was, this paper was harvested using, say, shelter cutting techniques or some sort of silvicultural techniques that promotes sustainable forestry.
Okay.
The thing is there's some other groups, say like Forest Ethics is a nonprofit kind of watchdog group that has come out and really aggressively said that the Sustainable Forestry Initiative is basically just a greenwashing front operation.
Really?
That's funded by paper companies.
It was International Paper?
International Paper. There were a couple of others. That's, well, I think Weyerhaeuser was one, maybe, that fund this approval company or organization.
So is it BS?
From what I can tell.
Really?
It looks that way. It's very disconcerting. Fortunately, there are some that do appear to be utterly legitimate. And the chief among them is the Forest Stewardship Council.
Okay.
They do the same thing, but they're the real deal.
So this article you sent me, there are a lot of major brands dumping the SFI. I saw that and I was like, well, that's terrible, but they're moving to the better standard. Is that correct?
That's the impression I have.
Okay. That makes sense now.
Yeah. Rather than bearing the SFI seal of approval, or buying paper that bears that seal of approval, because it's not even necessarily the paper companies that are doing this. Because they're the ones funding the SFI.
Right.
It's like Office Depot is no longer buying SFI sourced paper.
Okay.
I'm guessing they're probably going with the FSC, the Forest Stewardship Council.
So Hewlett Packard, AT&T, Pitney Bowles, Allstate.
They buy a lot of paper.
Shouting them out.
Right.
Because they're doing the right thing, it sounds like.
Yeah.
That makes more sense. I was confused. I thought they were dropping the SFI, which was a good thing. But, this is all clear now.
Right.
Thank you.
Hey, don't thank me. Thank Forest Ethics, who apparently routinely get cease and desist letters from paper companies and the forest or the Sustainable Forestry Initiative. And then, Chuck, the Forest Service itself is often criticized for being in bed with the timber industry.
I'm sure.
That Alaska thing I was teasing earlier.
Oh, yeah. What is it?
There is something called the Big Thorn Timber Sale. 6,000 acres, 6,200 acres of 700-year-old forest in the Tongass in southern Alaska up for sale for clear cutting.
Wow.
Clear cutting. And the problem is
it's
like
an old growth forest.
Yes, it is. That's exactly right. The problem is not just that people are worried that the forest won't recover, but that this forest is also used by other industries like fishing industry,
right?
Tourism industry.
Yeah.
These people are like, we're using this acreage. Can't just come in and cut it down.
Right.
Here's a couple of lawsuits to stop that sale. And, I guess a federal judge in 2015, I think March ruled. Nope. Go ahead. You're well within your rights.
Wow.
Maybe disgusting, but go ahead and sell 6,200 acres of old growth forest in Alaska for clear cutting.
With the presumption that it will go to a logging company?
Yes.
You'd be great. as if like, oh, I don't know, Warren Buffett bought it. Right. He said, I'm going to build a small house in the middle of it, and that's it.
That guy should wear a cape. So deforestation is a thing, and I agree with you. We should definitely do an episode just on that, right?
Yeah.
But that's not the only threat to the forests of the world.
No.
It is a serious threat, but
sure.
Man-made threats are not the only threats.
No, there's a few more natural threats. Insects, of course, specifically invasive species like the Eurasian gypsy moth came here in the 19th century, and when it's a caterpillar, it eats the leaves of hardwood trees.
Yes.
Like a lot of them.
Yeah.
To the tune of, since 1930, defoliated more than 80 million acres.
That is so many
of
trees.
East Coast forest.
Yeah.
80 million acres.
Just on the East Coast.
This little caterpillar.
Yeah.
So that's an insect. Disease is a problem. I know here in Georgia, we've, sudden oak death is a big problem.
Yeah.
And since it was originated in 19, or I guess found in 1955.
95.
Discovered. What'd I say?
55.
Oh.
A full 40 years after that.
95.
Yeah.
I remember when this happened.
It was probably Clinton's fault.
It was Clinton's fault. Since then, it's killed more than 1 million oak trees.
Yeah. That's no gypsy moth, but that's a lot.
No.
And then lastly, invasive species are a real problem.
Kudzu. That was the other one I want to do.
Yeah. Oh, you want to do one on kudzu?
Heck yeah.
So kudzu is a great example of an invasive species. It's a non-native, fast-growing vine that in, I think it's native Japan, has plenty of natural predators that like to eat it.
Sure.
Right? Here in the United States, in the southeastern United States, where it was given as a gift by Japanese businessmen in the 30s, it doesn't have any natural predators, and it just grows like crazy.
Oh, yeah.
And the problem is it grows up and over trees and creates its own, it uses the tree's structure and then creates its own canopy around it.
Amazing.
It basically creates a Dyson sphere around a tree.
Yeah.
But it's a reverse Dyson sphere.
Right.
It's accepting the sun from the outside rather than harvesting it from the inside.
Tree death is what it means.
I know. Don't you hate seeing that? Like, I just like shake my fist at kudzu. Like, get off of that tree. Just stay on the ground.
But do you ever take time to go out there and with your scissors, Josh?
Yes.
And cut it off that tree?
Very frequently.
Mile a minute weed is another good example, apparently. Another Asian import that has choked the mid-Atlantic region.
I guess the lesson here is if an Asian business person ever gives you a non-native plant as a gift.
Smile politely.
Say thank you very much.
Uh-huh.
Also, don't make eye contact.
Right.
And say thank you very much, but I cannot accept this gift.
But would you like to go have a lovely sushi meal?
Nice. You got anything else?
I got nothing else.
So that is timber. If you want, go type that word into the search bar at howstuffworks.com. And since I said search bar, it's time for listener mail.
I'm going to call this coolest tattoo I've seen in a while. Hey guys, listen to Satanic Panic today, and I loved it. I love that episode, by the way.
It was a good one.
Yeah, we got some good feedback. Jerry's even nodding. And she hates most of what we do.
She's not even aware of most of what we do.
She was born in 1982, this writer, and she says, I remember family members talking about parts of our home state of Kentucky that were lousy with Satan worshipers. One of the things I liked best in the episode was when we talked about the influence works of fiction had on superstition. Made me think of how I've encountered this in my own life. I have a great love of Ouija boards. And in fact, I don't think she's heard the episode on Ouija boards because she didn't reference it.
Oh, that was a good episode.
So, Carrie, we did an episode on that. You should listen to it. I think they are pretty and have I have great memories of playing with one as a kid. I have quite a few at home, including I have quite a few Ouija board items, including a tattoo on my chest. And she attached a photo. She's got, like, the upper lettering of the Ouija board, like, right across, like, under her neckline at the top of her chest.
On her sternum.
Yeah. It's, and, it, like, when she wears, like, a dress with that exposed,
right.
It's just lovely looking.
Like,
cool. That font and everything.
Yeah.
I saw the photo, and I thought it was really cool looking.
Nice.
But, of course, people are going to say, like, what's up with this girl?
Yeah. She's into Ouija boards.
This has led to some very interesting conversations, of course, with people. A lot of people really like it, like me, but some have been a little freaked out by it. thanks to movies like The Exorcist and more recently Ouija. The Ouija board has been given a lot more power, and I feel that it really deserves. I've had my tattoo for over a year and have not noticed any paranormal activity surrounding me, and I have not been possessed, and I have not had a demon use my chest as a doorway to our world. Yes. So I think I will be okay.
We'll see.
Keep up the great work. That is from Carrie, parentheses, like the movie.
Wow. A lot of horror movie references in that.
Yeah, I thought it was a very cool tattoo.
Nice, man. Carrie, right?
That's right.
Okay, thanks a lot, Carrie, for writing in. And if you want to write to us, you can join us on Facebook.com/StuffYouShouldKnow. You can tweet to us at SYSK Podcast. You can send us an email to StuffPodcast@HowStuffWorks.com. And as always, join us at our home on the web, StuffYouShouldKnow.com.
For more on this and thousands of other topics, visit HowStuffWorks.com.
Hello, from Wonder Media Network, I'm Jenny Kaplan, host of Womanica, a daily podcast that introduces you to the fascinating lives of women history has forgotten. We've always been intrigued by stories of disappearances. Whether it's a fraudster from the 17th century who kept evading the authorities, or a novelist who taunted the Nazis and faked her own death. We all want to know, what happened next? To find out, listen to Womanica on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome to Season 9 of Next Question with me, Katie Couric. I've got some big news to share with you in our season premiere featuring the one and only Kris Jenner.
Oh my gosh, congratulations. That is very, very exciting.
And that's just the beginning. We'll also be joined by podcast host Jay Shetty, Hillary Clinton, Renee Fleming, Liz Cheney, and many more. So come on in, take a break from the incessant negativity for a weekly dose of fascinating conversations. Some of them, I promise, will actually put you in a good mood. Listen to Next Question with me, Katie Couric, on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.